contemplate on that means what those words really meant apart from just the meaning of the words, and then that becomes contemplation. So let us begin with the prayer that is in the beginning of the book. This is not working. Ah, yeah, now you got it. That also requires prayer, you know. So it was not working before that. So, God, unto whom all hearts be open, and unto whom all will speaketh, and unto whom no privy thing is hid, I beseech thee so far to cleanse the intent of mine heart with the unspeakable gift of thy grace, that I may perfectly love thee and worthily praise thee. Amen. So, last time we saw, this is the fifth class that is being conducted. So, in last class we saw that he said that this is the simplest of the works, the work of realizing the truth beyond this cloud of unknowing, beyond this ignorance, and that work is the simplest work. Many of us have this idea that spiritual life and realizing the truth, given my present condition, seems to be the most difficult thing. Actually, this is the simplest thing because it is going in the right direction. Is going in the right direction simple, or going in the wrong direction is simple? It is going in the right direction always is going to be simple, because eventually we have to come to the right direction. If we are going in the wrong direction, it is only moving around. It is not getting anywhere. Just like that our lives go on, in doing all things without deriving the real satisfaction. So this is the right way, and therefore the simplest of the work. The other works that we do, they are very difficult works. Even if we see that what is simple in the world, are all those things which we otherwise do, are they simple? And many tell me that, well, Swami, you don't understand how many difficulties that we have to go through. It is a very difficult work that I have to do. I have to, you see, study so much for my work. I have to deal with so many people, so many different types of problems. So, the work is, every work is difficult. Even this little boy, he thinks that his study is also very difficult. He was complaining that my mom was giving me so many difficult questions today. So, everything is kind of difficult. The simplest work of all is to realize the truth. And then he has also mentioned that one has to remember this, that whatever may we be doing, all that we are doing takes for granted this distinction of I and the world. And so therefore lies within the cloud of unknowing. This ignorance, this darkness and this cloud is between you and your God. It is even our prayers, they also are in this cloud. Even our meditations, they are within this cloud. Beyond this cloud, well, it is indescribable. But whatever we do, even as spiritual practice, is within this cloud. And this needs to be understood, because we make a division, okay, this is secular and this is spiritual. If I am just discussing about which restaurant gives which delicacies, it is secular. But if I am discussing about in which church what scripture is taught, then it is spiritual. Well, these are our terms, secular and spiritual. But in all these, this division of I and world is there. I and you. I want to experience God. So this little I is always interfering with our what we call knowledge, making it convert into really ignorance. Because this particular bondage is always there. Through this enclave, so to say, we are seeing things, and therefore everything is colored for us. So one must actually understand this so that we will be humble about what we know. We will be ready to progress further. It is to be understood, as this book will further continue, that whatever we do, even what is called spiritual practice, there we have the things like, you know, okay, which are in this cloud. We read something and we feel we understood by reason, and so we conclude that now I have known all about God that is to be known. Nothing more is hidden from me. But that is not the case. Even this rational understanding is within this cloud. The rationality is very limited, as we can see. It is basically dependent on these divisions, that this is I, this is how I understand, this is first step, this is second step, this is third step. Like that we go in a rational way and miss a lot, because it is only going in a linear fashion, while discarding or not looking at most of the other things. And even when we try to look at it, it is through this personality, I and mine. And therefore, this cloud of unknowing, this darkness is covering all our ignorance. It is not going to be just gone because I am sitting now for meditation. Again, this should not be letting us feel that so anyway everything is in ignorance. So why not then stop meditating and all such other things? Everything is meditated in the ignorance. So all the spiritual practices also are part of it. So let me just stop and lead a so-called normal life instead of getting engaged in them, because that is also ignorance. And the meditation and worships and prayers and study of all the spiritual books that I do, that's no different from that either. and therefore it is there is a some glitch here. Okay, so but this thought should be avoided. It is not that we should not meditate. While we meditate, while we do all these spiritual practices prescribed by our teachers, and while we must do them sincerely, we must also remember their limitation, that they can take us only so far. They can take us maybe to the edge of the cloud, but then those practices also fall behind. Sri Ramakrishna used to tell that story about the three robbers. They represent those three gunas, the sattva, rajas and tamas. All three are robbers in the sense they are part of this ignorance. Sattva is the shining one, the best one, virtuous one, but still a robber. So what happened was these three robbers caught hold of a wayfarer and robbed everything. Then they said that what is the point in now keeping this fellow alive? He may go and report to the police. Let us kill him. This was the opinion of the tamasika one, the darkest one. The other, who had a little compassion, a bit fair, he made a point. I understand, you know, that he may tell police and so we may get caught, and that is why you are thinking of killing him. But that's too cruel. What we can do is we will tie him to this tree and run away. By the time somebody comes and releases him, we will be anyway far away from the reach of police. So they agreed and they tied him and left. But the third one, sattva, he immediately came back and said, "Oh, I will release you." And so he cut all these ropes and then said that we have brought you in the deep forest. You will not be able to find the way out. So let me come with you and we will, I'll come with you and show you the way. And so he comes with him, walks with him till they come to the edge of the forest near the path near his village. And then this third robber points out, "Now that is your village. Do you see that? This is the path." And this man was tremendously feeling that gratefulness for this wonderful benefactor who released him. Not only that, came all the way to show him the path. And so he said, "Please come with me. Please come to my home. You have done such good turn to me. I must give you something, and please be a guest at my house." This man, then this third robber, he said, "Sorry, I can't do that. I am a robber. I can't come with you there that far. I will get caught. No, this is the limit that I can take you to. Now it is all up to you." So all these spiritual practices are like the third, this good robber. We are already all bound, that is true. And the spiritual practices, the sattva guna, that also is robber. It is comparatively purer. and much better than getting in the hands of the other two. So this third robber releases you, but still within that forest, within that ignorance alone is their work. So this is to be remembered, that howsoever spiritual practice we may do, it cannot take us beyond ignorance. Another reason for remembering this is, otherwise we will not feel the necessity of surrender. We may feel that, okay, I am right now spending 20 minutes in meditation every day. Now if I continue further and spend, say, 1 hour and 2 hours, gradually I think all my ignorance will go away. Well, no. Howsoever you may do, it may purify your heart more to an extent, but all comes as a matter of just grace. That is the truth. And your efforts do not bring you the truth per se. And still one has to keep on doing effort so that we remain at least on the right track. So, this is an important message here, that no matter what you do, it is in the Kathopanishad also you see this great idea that who can realize the truth, and the Upanishad says that nayam atma pravachanena labhya na medhaya na bahuna shrutena, that this self cannot be realized by what? By giving lot of discourses or listening to lot of wonderful scriptural discourses, all the saintly books, reading of those, that doesn't automatically bring this knowledge of the self. Na bahuna shrutena, not by reading all the scriptures and becoming master of it, still you may not know it. If I am very intelligent, a brilliant person, I can solve all the mathematical problems, and I am really a wizard in all these matters. I know all these things. No, na medhaya na bahuna shrutena. Then who gets it? How do you only keep on aspiring for it? Keep on intensely aspiring for it. Yameva esha vrinate. That vrinate is the important word there. Vrinate means that intense, that aspiration should be there to realize it. I want that. I want that again and again. Like a little child really wants something, then keeps on asking for it. Keeps on asking for it all the time. Because it is really asking, not just making a show, but truly feels that I have to have it. Then keeps, no other thought comes to that child, only this thought. And thus this spiritual aspirant should have that intensity of aspiration. That is called vrinate. The one who aspires for the self like that. Then what happens? Yameva esha vrinate tena labdha. That person realizes. But how? Because he is aspiring, is that the reason? Is that sufficient reason? No, the grace has to come from there. Tasya isha atma vivrinate. There the self then gets uncovered. It is not by your effort alone. Your effort had this much role that it conveyed your intent. Intense intent has been conveyed by your efforts. If we really want something, we will not be able to stop making efforts in that direction. We will keep on making mentally and physically all sorts of efforts. It is something like this, that some time back, and many of you must have had this experience, similar type of experience, I mean, and that I was coming from some place, I had gone driving there, and as I returned, I saw that I am missing my wallet. And then I became, you know, kind of so much concerned, I have to get my wallet, where did I drop it? I thought that maybe I didn't take with me or what. I started looking here and there, everywhere. I didn't see. Then I thought, well, I stopped at one place to ask the address. Maybe did I take out there and drop there? I went back again, drove there, asked. They said, no, sorry, we don't see anything here. And then looking here, there, everywhere. And then first thing I did after, didn't find, called the credit card companies to, you know, and all that. While looking at it all the time, where it is, it could be, a lot of problem, you know, no driving license, nothing. Very much perturbed. I could not really pay attention to any work. I could not even think of, you know, that, well, it is time for food, let me go. Other things were going on kind of mechanically, but the mind was all set on that, where did that wallet go, till somehow I found it. It was in the car, fallen in the car as I was getting out. So look at what was happening. The mind was intently looking for it. But see, because I was looking for it, did I find it? No, because I was looking at all other places except where it was. So I didn't find it by that. Suddenly then I opened the car and found that it was there somewhere in the near the, that door. So that is how you keep on looking for it, but that doesn't mean that you will find just because of it. It may happen that you are not looking for it and it suddenly you see it. It is that, but when you are looking for it, it conveys your intent that you want it. And then because of that, then it can be, you know, the grace. You become eligible for the grace because you really want it. So from your side, from the side of the aspirant, it is intense seeking. And how this seeking becomes really materialized is because of the grace. So therefore, no matter what we are doing, it is all shrouded in that. And therefore, what happens is that one feels, as I mentioned earlier, that let me give up this spiritual practice. I had been doing it for a few days or maybe a few years, enough of this. Nothing is really happening. One of our great Swamis, he was being asked by one of his students that, you know, that he had actually taken to, that student had taken to a monastic life. And then he said, oh my goodness, for so many months I have been trying hard I have been doing my meditation, this, that. Really, I am putting in all efforts. I am feeling tired. Nothing is happening. I am feeling that frustration. I don't think I am not made for God realization. It may not happen to me. Some people are made just like that. I don't think I am made for that. Then why is it happening like this? And that Swami told in a smiling way, so do you think you will realize it by stopping meditation? You at least are meditating, leading a good life, a pure life, that is bringing you more lasting happiness, instead of getting more involved into bondage. You are at least doing something in that direction. Do you think by stopping it, then do it, try that. In fact, you had been doing that and you saw that that is not the way you came to lead a purer life. So why? And that man understood that it is not the case, that by leaving this it will happen. We have to have this immense patience has to be there. He says here that but sorrowfully you now say, what shall I do? How shall I give? Oh, sorry, this will come later, yeah. Do not wonder, therefore, that I urge you on to this work, for this is a work, as you shall learn in a little while, that man would have continued to do if he had never sinned. And it was for this work that man was made, as all things also were made to help him and further him in this work, so that by means of it man shall be made whole again. And by failing to carry out this work, a man falls ever deeper and deeper into sin and is drawn ever further and further away from God. So, one has to hold on to this work. Patience and perseverance necessary. Without that, this cannot be done. You may keep on thinking that my reason tells me like this. But reason is not the right tool for this. Reason has its use, but not to take us there. He mentions that do not slacken, therefore, but persevere in the work until you feel the desire. For when you begin it, you will find that there is at the start but a darkness. There is, as it were, a cloud of unknowing. You know not what it is, except that you feel in your will a naked intent towards God. That is, now you can at least see the cloud of unknowing. Till then, the cloud of unknowing also was not visible. Now, I don't know what language to use for this. And that the cloud of unknowing also was not visible. With spiritual practice, the intent becomes pure, and then you at least see that this is all in the cloud of unknowing. At least one becomes aware of the ignorance. No matter what you do, this darkness and this cloud is between you and your God, and because of it, you can neither see Him clearly with your reason in the light of understanding, nor can you feel Him with your affection in the sweetness of love. Be prepared, therefore, to remain in this darkness as long as must be, crying evermore for Him whom you love. For if you are ever to feel Him or to see Him, it will necessarily be within this cloud and within this darkness. And if you will work with great effort as I bid you, I trust in His mercy that you will achieve it. And this is how this teacher's advice is, that persevere. Your reason cannot take you there, your emotions cannot take you there. As we sing Sri Ramakrishna's that Arati song, that namo namo prabhu vakyam anatita, that oh Lord, you are beyond speech and mind. Yes, that is the truth. That, but another part is there, you are the supporter, you are the governor of this speech and mind too. They cannot catch you, but you are catching them. You are holding them, you are making them work. So, what it suggests is there is a connection. And this connection is important. To use this connection, see, with my speech and reason, my mind, I cannot really reach God. Okay. But there is some connection between God and that, because God's support is needed. God is needed for their functioning. Without God, they cannot function. So now, what does it mean that God and these things have some connectivity? Some connection between them. What that connection? Well, it is not a regular causal connection. This is governed by God. So, if I have this and if I investigate within this, I will find God. No, not that simple. But you have to ponder deeper. That it is because one can understand that it is the God who makes this work. So try to feel God in and through all these. And when this intent, as he mentions, when the intent becomes pure, that and you will work with great effort as I bid you, I trust in His mercy. Then you trust in His mercy. Then His mercy will come. As that Sri Ramakrishna's disciple used to tell, that if somebody is desperately looking for a job, then keeps on applying here, there, everywhere. Now just by applying doesn't mean that he is going to land the job. But that is what maximum this person can do. Keep on applying everywhere, wherever there is some kind of employment available. And then if his application is going in the right place, if there is a need, then gets a response. And that is a matter of grace. That yes, I got the job. But you applied, but the response has to come from the other side, and you cannot dictate that response. The thing is that one cannot dictate that response. just because I have applied, you have to give me. No, that cannot be the case. Your application is showing just your intent. Whether you will get it or not, well, depends. It is, yeah, when I was applying for visa to US, every time that it was written at every step that acceptance of this application doesn't mean that visa will be granted. It only means that your application has reached. It doesn't guarantee a visa. Then even after I got visa, it was mentioned there, having the visa does not automatically make you eligible to enter the country. You may still be stopped at the immigration and can be sent back. It is. And you cannot say that this is matter of right. What they want to say is that there is nothing in this as a matter of right. This is you are being granted, that's all, as a matter of grace. There is no conditions that you can demand it. That is the first thing that was being told. You cannot demand a visa. It is no question of demand there. You can apply for a visa. You cannot demand it. So this is also going to that territory of God. We can only keep on applying. We cannot demand it. We do not have really the rightful credentials, except that we belong to God. That's it. So then he says, in order that you do not err in this work and misconceive it to be something other than it is, I will tell you a little more about it as it seems to me. And another problem that we come across, and that is, oh, it takes such a long time to do spiritual practice. It will take enormous amount of time. Even those sages, they had to, you know, they stood on one leg for 1,000 years and did practice all sorts of penances. Then they got somewhere, at least. So it takes long time. And how many years of my life are left after all? The life is uncertain. How long am I going to live? Who knows? And then as the age advances, people start giving more and more of these excuses that anyway it takes long time. I am already 50 or 60 or whatever, or 70. So that, you know, I am fighting against time. It is therefore, because these things take long time, and there are many scriptural quotes, you know, to support that, like they can quote from Patanjali that it requires long, satu dirgha kala, that is the first word in that aphorism, that it takes long time, dirgha kala. But here he says that it takes very little time. This work requires shortest time. It sounds kind of counterintuitive. Why it takes shortest time? It takes really shortest time. To do this work properly does not require a long time as some men believe. It is shortest work than man can imagine. It is shortest work that man can imagine. It is neither longer nor shorter than an atom. And an atom is, by the definition of true philosophers in the science of astronomy, the least part of time. The least part of time what you can imagine. In that, this work gets accomplished. It is like a flash. It just dawns upon you. It is like you are famous, regular, very common Vedanta example that you are seeing the rope as a snake. And then it suddenly dawns upon you that it is, it is not a snake, it is rope. You just come closer and you say, oh my goodness, I was thinking that it is snake. I actually saw it as snake, but it is actually rope. And so how long did the snake take to go away? How long, how much time did the snake needed to run away from there, Vitthal, can you tell? A blink of an eye, correct, see. So the shortest of the time, you see, that it is, it didn't require any time for the snake to actually go away. Why? Because the snake wasn't there at all. God alone is. And we are seeing that very divine reality as this I and mine, these names and forms, all these changing things we are taking as real, like in ignorance taking the rope as snake to be real. And well, it just vanishes, this illusion just vanishes, that's it. So how much time does it take? Actually the sense of time completely disappears. Sense of time is a part of this illusion. A sense of time and space, some of you must have read Swami Vivekananda's that great book Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga has one chapter on absolute and manifestation. There he has shown the diagram of a prism. A prism has those these three sides. It is like a triangle, and then three sides are on each, and then it becomes what that thing is called? A cone, a pyramid. Yeah, it is a pyramid. So it is this three sides of this, he says, are time, space and causation. And so when you hold this pyramid, this prism in sunlight, you will see the sunlight, which we see as one, gets variegated into different colors. So this one reality coming from this prism of time, space and causation is appearing as this multiplicity. You can see that everything that we perceive, every event that we perceive has these three components of which it is made of: time, space and causation. So it is therefore, how much time does it take is really an irrational question, because it is the time vanishes. It is like asking how much time does it take for the time to vanish. It is not really an answerable question, in fact not a logically put question either. So therefore what is to be done? It takes very little time, it's the shortest time to accomplish. But now he says that we have to therefore keep an account of time. And this is, this is the most succinct and yet very deep explanation of this that I have read at any other place. Great thing. He mentions that it is this time of which it has been written of the time that has been given to you. You shall be asked how you have spent it. And it is certainly reasonable that you give an account of it, for it is neither longer nor shorter, but varies according to only one stirring within the principal working of power of your soul, namely your will. These are very significant sentences, friends. There can be just so many willings or desirings, no more and no fewer may be and are in 1 hour in your will as there are atoms in 1 hour. The events as they happen, we see in our brain, that makes the notion of time for us. The change as we perceive, that generates the sense of time. Imagine that nothing is changing. Nothing absolutely is changing. There is no meaning to word time. Time is just the distance that we perceive in the distinct events. We perceive the events as distinct. Although, if we don't perceive them as distinct, then there is no time. When we perceive that, here in front of me, Sukalyan and Charles, they are sitting. Now, my eyes can discern a distance between them. Our eyes have a particular resolving power. And so, we can see the distinction between them, like he is sitting here, he is sitting here. There is a distance between them. If I go far enough, then this distance will be indiscernible for my eye. The resolution power of eye will not be able to see the separation. And then for that perception through the eye, there is no distance between them. There is no distance between them. Another example I can give you, that it is, it happens many times that a particular planet or star comes very close to moon. As if it is going, sometimes it appears going through the moon, So at one time you see that there is no distance between that planet and moon. Is there no distance? Had there been actually no distance, it would have been a disaster. But there is huge distance. The distance enough to pass a few Earths between them. But our eye cannot discern that distance. So, distance is generated, this idea of distance is generated by our discernment. How is our power of seeing the difference? That is how we get the idea of space. We see things placed differently. And we get an idea of time when we see events placed one separate from another. You cannot have any idea, let alone measurement, not have any idea, any concept of time if there is no change. Think of it, friends. Therefore, it is just an instant that you think of something happening, you have an instant. You have a desire which was not there, now it has come. So a change has happened. And so now you have a time, a moment. It was not there, it is there. The difference is felt. So you get the sense of time. Now, so every time there is just one. That is again a peculiarity of human brain that it just thinks in these 1, 2, 3 like this natural numbers, what are called natural numbers. It is you cannot therefore do it just, you know, in a, we imagine half, one third, one tenth and so forth. But actually it is, when we do it, it becomes 1, 2, 3, 4 like that. There is no half in our conception. Our mind is not, our brain is not having that software. Our program is like that. And so we have only one moment per event. An event generates a moment. And the atom, what is called here, the atom of time. So we have that same unit, you know, atom of matter and atom of time, atom of space also. Like somebody was telling me here that we were looking where to keep certain things, and that person comes and says, Swami, here is tons of space. As if space can be weighed in terms of tons. Well, it is, tons are there. So time is also an atom there. So we have these atoms of time, and just keep account of every moment. What am I have I been doing? So that amount of time spent, that is really the time that is used. Other is time wasted. That time of which we can give this account, that yes, I have been using it for this journey. That alone, God will ask you only account of that much time. What have you been doing? And so he says, that he accords with our soul in terms of the limits of his Godhead. Well, that is actually, it will come later that he says that you, since just so that you do not misuse time, you are being given only one moment at a time. Now this is problem of language, we have to say. You are never given two, so that you may complain that, well, I didn't know what to do with the other. No, only one, the intent, that moment. So make good use of it. That is the only thing that will be asked. Now this comes, this question, that how to connect, since this darkness and this cloud is always going to be between I and my God, no matter what I do. Now here comes the power of love and power of grace. So we have to love God with all that force available, force of love, power of love that we have. And then the power of grace correspondingly descends. It is not, you cannot really make any mathematical formula about it, that okay, the power of love is directly proportional to the power of grace. But yet we can say, if just making use of our feeble language, that the spiritual aspirant starts feeling that I am loving God, that itself is His grace. What more to ask for? My, see, that whatever love that is there for in my heart for God, and how much spiritual practice I am able to do, that also is part, not of my ego, but of His grace. So, that is, we shall take up these topics later. This is that the what is this cloud and all that? This is not an ordinary cloud. And then how to connect what I get by doing this and what I miss by not getting this, all these questions would be there, and he deals with them in this book. But we will postpone the discussion on these slides for the next Tuesday. Any questions about what we discussed in this class? Yes, Abhijit.
So what is that answer to that question, that love could be an end to itself, and then if you are in that state, where does that yearning has to come? Where is that suffering then that you're missing God? That you have to yearn for God and keep yearning.
So that is that yearning is the instrument, that that yearning will make you do the efforts. Like I was telling, if you yearn to find your wallet, then you will keep on looking for it, even in the most irrational way. I tried to find out in some other pocket of some other jacket that I had not put on, but maybe, who knows, you know, when it is not where it should be, then it could be anywhere, so let me look anywhere. So one really acts irrationally there, that and how do you find it? There is no logical connection between yearning and finding. Yearning keeps you make efforts. Automatically, if there is yearning, you will keep on making efforts.
No, what I mean is, like, if you're, that itself is an end. Like Sri Ramakrishna says, don't want to be sugar. I want to keep that separation.
Well, that is a stage. That is not this. That is, you can say that I don't want to be sugar, I want to eat sugar. That is called after you realize, after you become sugar, it is a very mysterious phenomena that on the this plane of I and you, even after this whole ignorance is dissolved, there is no scope for this kind of perception. And yet, when this perception is there, then how does it get expressed? It is like this, that I and my God. So, how is that instead of feeling the other worldly things as sweet, only the God is felt as sweet, lovable and all that. So, that is a very different state. It is not for the spiritual aspirants to say that, quoting Sri Ramakrishna, you say.
So instead of sattva that they say, like, you are perfectly in sattva.
Yeah.
How can you then yearn for God?
Yes, if you are in sattva, the yearning becomes intense. In that sattva, the quality of sattva is that where now you are feeling the reality, and therefore you are feeling more intensely the desire to have it. When your yearning increases, I can let you tell, you know, that when I was walking to the Kedarnath temple in Himalaya, a strenuous walk uphill climb, about I think some 10 miles or so, and it is, you get exhausted, the yearning is there, therefore you take up that effort that I must see this, I must see it. And as we go closer and closer, we start seeing the signs that okay, this now we have this Rambada, okay, so one stop. So as you go closer, you start feeling more and more that okay, so come on, let's go. And when, although we were terribly tired, from a distance, when we saw that this is, that Kedarnath is right there, so much of that enthusiasm and yearning and all, no, okay, this is it, so you, that brings really more energy, gets into the system and you go there. So, because now you feel it more as real. It is, when you don't feel it as real, the yearning also is not real basically. So, but when you have the reality of it, when you feel the reality of it, that it is right there, the yearning increases. Why most people do not feel yearning for God? Because it is not seen as real. This world is real, my job is real, the money is real, the objects of enjoyment that I get, they are real. So you feel yearning for that, even for some little money, one feels so much of yearning. But why? Because whatever is you see as real, you feel yearning. And then you forcibly try to ignite yearning for God based on this truths of the scriptures. That okay, that is the ultimate source of satisfaction, the teachers have said that. So you forcefully create a yearning. But when one starts really feeling the existence of that object, that then the yearning also becomes real. This is all still in sattva, and it is not that you have gone beyond it, no. Yes, it is exactly, that is how like you are say going to Miami, now you make effort to go to Miami, but then you can go to Miami basically because Miami is there, you didn't make Miami. So it is kind of grace of Miami that you can go to Miami, is it not? Your feeling also that I should go to Miami is because Miami is there, otherwise that is not possible. Because God is there, the yearning of God is also possible. It is, and the spiritual aspirant starts feeling that more and more, that even the spiritual practice is possible because of that. Sometimes these things are misused by us. I was asking one devotee, why do you not these days come for meditation? And she said, well, let God create the yearning. It is all depends on God. If God is pulling me, then only I can come, is it not? Nothing happens just by my ego. You were telling the other day that nothing happened. Now this is really misusing this idea. That okay, what can I do? There is no yearning in me because God is not showering the grace through creating the yearning. So, it is a kind of self-deception, that's all. Okay, any other question? Yes, Brit?
The idea of loving God, the first commandment.
Yeah.
In the Christian
yeah.
faith is love God with all your heart.
Yeah.
I don't know God. I wish I did. And It's hard to love something that you don't know.
Exactly, that is very correct. And therefore, first there has to be this faith in scriptures and faith in teachers that I don't know, but others, they know and they are telling about him. And that is called in Vedanta, Shraddha, you know, that word Shraddha. Shraddha means, although you don't know it, you take the words of teachers and scriptures as true, and taking what they are saying as true, you guide your life, and thus you get there. That is how Shankaracharya has given this definition of this word, Shraddha. What is the word? Shraddha. Say? Shraddha. That it is, you don't see it.
I have this intuitive sense that it's right.
Yeah. That is how you hold on to that sense. That intuitive sense. That and also supported by the rational thought. Rational thought means, see, normally people will be speaking truth. Moreover, these great teachers of mankind, they had no ulterior motive to cheat you. They were not ignorant either, that they were just speaking without knowledge. So, what they have said must be true. What they said must be true. Now, implant this very strongly. I have to implant this very strongly in my heart, that although I am not able to experience that at this moment, it certainly is true. And then holding on to this, then we get it. That is what Shankaracharya assures, you know, that by holding on to this, you realize it. That is Shraddha. By Shraddha, you realize the reality, the truth. That is how the love increases. First, you have in Narada's aphorisms on love also this idea is there, that first you have to kind of, you know, make efforts to have love. Like when some new relationship, so you make efforts, you know, to please that person, bring flowers or bring some this thing, remember the birthday and call and so forth, you know. So that, you know, these are the formal things. They do not guarantee love, nor that they actually, if there is love, this will happen. But these are common norms through which the love is expressed. Say nice things about that person. But when the love ripens, and then that relationship is taken for granted, and it is, then you don't care about the formalities. That is how the difference is. You know. First, you start loving God like that. Okay, let me pray to God. Let me sing the glories of the God. Let me make some rules that at least 2 hours I will spend in that every day. So, gradually now, you will start feeling the presence of God. Now that thing will become more and more real in your life. So the love will become then real because the God becomes real.
This is bhakti.
Yeah, bhakti and jnana, they are same thing, only the terminology differs a little bit, that's all. So let us conclude with the closing prayer. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.